everyone. Welcome to the Foster Inclusion Podcast, and thank you so much for joining me. I'm your host, Saida Gomez-Fleury, and in this episode, I'm going to run down the top diversity and inclusion stories of 2020. I'm not going to lie. As you know, the year was pretty heavy, so if you're feeling a bit blue, you may want to hold off on listening to this episode. And if you're up for it, there's a lot to cover, so let's get to it. I have to start by talking about COVID-19 and the murder of George Floyd. I'm actually old enough to remember the Rodney King beating in Los Angeles in 1991. I think I was around 12 years old at the time when I saw the video broadcast on Canadian news. Aside from violence in movies, Rodney King's beating was the first time I saw police inflict extreme force and brutality on a man because of the color of his skin. After the video was released, there was outrage and there were protests in the streets. The outrage came primarily from members of the African American community, and I may have been too young at the time, but I don't remember seeing or hearing about a mass response from the general public or the private sector. Since the video release of Rodney King's beating by the Los Angeles Police Department, there have been many highly publicized cases of Black men and women being violently attacked or killed because of the color of their skin. And these attacks were not limited to the United States. With George Floyd, we were still in the early days of the coronavirus and spending even more time online. Even though we were working from home, it was impossible to avoid seeing or hearing about the details of his murder. Now, the reason I'm linking COVID-19 and George Floyd's death is that I believe that if we were all going about our business as usual, going through the motions of our daily routines, we may have learned about his death and thought, oh, what a tragic story, and then kept it moving. As cynical as this sounds, this is reflective of our collective behavior in the past. But because the majority of us were at home and online even more than usual, we could not escape it. It's like the general public suddenly woke up and realized that racism is real. One's appearance, skin color, facial features, hair texture, all arbitrary physical characteristics upon which stereotypes were built and continue to be reinforced, has a profound impact on the way one is treated. In this particular case, that treatment led to death. It took an extreme, tragic event for people to start looking inwardly, to explore unconscious bias, and to get curious about how unconscious bias shows up in everyday life, be it at work or at home. Suddenly, folks were ready to start having uncomfortable conversations. So this leads me to the next big diversity and inclusion story of 2020, the corporate response to George Floyd's death. The long list of companies that spoke out publicly against racism or pledged to donate money to fight racism ranged from asset management giant BlackRock and VC firm Sequoia Capital to tech giants Apple, Twitter, Facebook, Google, and Amazon, and then to consumer brands like Ben & Jerry's ice cream, Nike, Lego, and McDonald's. In Canada, the Black North Initiative was launched. Its commitment to, and I quote, the removal of anti-Black systemic barriers negatively affecting the lives of Black Canadians, is backed by over 300 Canadian CEOs that have signed the pledge. They represent companies such as NBA Canada, Adidas, Air Canada, Mondelez, Amex, Bank of Montreal, Cisco, the Desjardins Group, Manulife Financial, and the list goes on. In some Western countries, protesters took to the streets to proclaim Black Lives Matter. Even here in Geneva, 10,000 people gathered in the streets in support of the BLM movement. Within companies and not-for-profits, executive leadership and staff signed up for unconscious bias training and were encouraged to have uncomfortable discussions about racism. But were some just doing it for show? There are companies that vowed to take steps towards building more diverse, equitable, and inclusive workplaces, but are being called out and even sued for not walking the talk. Stories of poor employee engagement, workplace harassment, misogyny, racism, and sexism began to leak. The next big diversity and inclusion story of 2020 is diversity washing or woke washing, which happens when an organization claims to stand for diversity, equity, and inclusion, but fails to make any real or meaningful changes. To quote a Forbes article entitled "The Dangers of Diversity Washing and What to Do Instead," published on November 30th, 2020, the problem here is that the biases against this progress run deep. It's easy to hire a vice president of diversity to run feel-good initiatives. It's easy to include more BIPOC imagery in marketing campaigns. However, it's incredibly challenging for leaders to embrace transparency, recognize faults within themselves and the larger organization, and deliberately lead the charge in correcting the imbalances of opportunity and fair treatment. So basically, without reflective leadership at the top, your DE&I initiatives will yield poor results. A high-profile example of this involves Pinterest, the image sharing and social media service. Pinterest is a company that was known as being a nice place to work. Shortly after the murder of George Floyd in May, the company posted the following statement of support. "We heard directly from our Black employees about the pain and fear they feel every day living in America. This is not just a moment in time. With everything we do, we will make it clear that our Black employees matter, Black Pinterest users and creators matter, and Black lives matter." It's a very strong statement. But ironically, it was released shortly after two Black female employees quit the organization due to allegations of racism, abuse, and discriminatory treatment by Pinterest coworkers, managers, and human resource leaders. In addition, the company's former chief operating officer filed a gender discrimination lawsuit in which she alleged that she was brazenly fired after she complained about gender bias. Her lawsuit was settled in December for $22.5 million, which includes a $2.5 million investment to be used towards advancing women and underrepresented communities in the tech industry. To make matters worse, Pinterest shareholder group, the Employees Retirement System of Rhode Island, filed a complaint at the end of November against the company. In it, they claim that Pinterest has, and I quote, "a systemic culture, policy, and practice of illegal discrimination on the basis of race and sex from at least February 2018 through the present relevant period." Pinterest's top executives and members of its board of directors personally engaged in, facilitated, or knowingly ignored the discrimination and retaliation against those who spoke up and challenged the company's white male leadership clique. As a result of the defendant's illegal misconduct, the company's financial position and its goodwill and reputation among its largely female user base, which Pinterest's success depends upon, were harmed and continue to be harmed. This is a story that I will continue to follow, and I look forward to learning about how the company's senior leadership team goes about developing the role modeling behavior necessary to foster an inclusive environment within the organization. Another big story or theme in 2020 was systemic change. In May 2018, Bill C-25 was passed in Canada. It's an act to amend the Canada Business Corporations Act, the Canada Cooperatives Act, the Canada Not-for-Profit Act, and the Competition Act. There are four main items listed on the bill, one of which is the requirement of certain corporations to place before the shareholders at every annual meeting information respecting diversity among directors and the members of senior management. This amendment took effect on January 1st, 2020. This comply or explain approach to diversity disclosure explicitly extends beyond women to include, and I quote, Aboriginal peoples, persons with disabilities, and members of visible minorities. Over in the U.S., on December 1st, 2020, NASDAQ filed a proposal with the SEC to advance diversity through listing requirements. According to its website, the standardized disclosure framework would drive greater transparency on corporate governance. If the SEC approves, then all companies listed on NASDAQ's U.S. exchange would publicly disclose consistent, transparent diversity statistics regarding their board of directors. Like in Canada, NASDAQ is adopting a comply or explain approach. Companies that do not have at least two diverse directors, and here diverse is defined as self-identifying as female or self-identifying as either an underrepresented minority or LGBTQ+, will have to explain why. NASDAQ claims its goals are to provide stakeholders with a better understanding of companies, board composition, and to enhance investor confidence. And there is increasing evidence that demonstrates the need for change. Citi GPS, which stands for Global Perspectives and Solutions, released a report called Closing the Racial Inequality Gaps, the Economic Cost of Black Inequality in the U.S. In the report, Citi estimates that the U.S. economy lost $16 trillion over the past 20 years due to racism and discrimination. Some key figures include $2.7 trillion lost due to the black wage gap, $218 billion lost in housing sales and expenditures due to poor access to housing credit, $90 to $113 billion lost in income due to poor access to higher education, and $13 trillion lost in business revenue due to unfair and inequitable lending practices to black entrepreneurs. In addition, the U.S. economy could see a $5 trillion boost over the next 5 years if organizations take steps to eliminate discrimination against African Americans. Another big diversity and inclusion story in 2020 includes Pope Francis and the Vatican. After the death of George Floyd, Pope Francis mentioned Mr. Floyd by name twice. He also showed support to an American bishop who knelt in prayer during a Black Lives Matter protest. The Vatican News published an article on its website about protesters' fight to end systemic racism and included excerpts from the Pope's general audience of June 3rd, where Pope Francis said, and I quote, "We cannot tolerate or turn a blind eye to racism and exclusion in any form and yet claim to defend the sacredness of every human life. Any kind of social or cultural discrimination in basic personal rights on the grounds of sex, race, color, social conditions, language, or religion must be curbed and eradicated as incompatible with God's design. Later in the year, the Pope stunned many by openly showing his support for same-sex civil unions. In a documentary filmed by Evgeny Afanevsky, the Pope states that homosexual people are children of God and have the right to be in a family. While some believe that his official stance on same-sex unions is not enough because it does not endorse same-sex marriage, others see the Pope's stance as progress within the Catholic Church. Moving on to books. Isabel Wilkerson released an incredible book called Caste: The Origins of Our Discontents. In it, she examines the American caste system broken down into 8 pillars. She also draws comparisons between the American caste system and those of India and Nazi Germany. I personally found it brilliant that she decided to take a step back to explore the social hierarchy through the lens of a caste system as opposed to through the lens of racism. I recommend this book to everyone, irrespective of where you live, whether you're an aspiring business leader or you're at the top of a large multinational corporation. Though contextually the book focuses on the US, the frameworks used allow the reader to take a step back to consider the social hierarchy within which the reader finds themselves. I picked up my copy at Payot here in Geneva, and the last time I checked, it was only available in English, but I hope it'll be translated into French and other European languages soon. And the U.S. saw the election of the first Black and South Asian female vice president. I prefer not to discuss party politics, but I must acknowledge the symbolism of the election of Vice President Kamala Harris. Representation is an important variable in fostering greater diversity, equity, and inclusion. On a very personal note, I relate strongly to one aspect of Kamala Harris's identity. Her father immigrated from Jamaica to the U.S., her mother from India. Kamala Harris identifies as American while embracing her cultural heritage. My parents immigrated from Trinidad and Tobago to Toronto, Canada. I identify as Canadian while embracing my Trini heritage. To add further dimension to my identity, I recently became a Swiss citizen, and I have to say that the entire process was somewhat emotional. It lasted a couple of years, and I wrote my citizenship exam while I was pregnant with my daughter. It's funny because on the day of the exam, the elevators were broken, and so we had to walk up the stairs to the examination room. I was so out of breath by the time I reached the room that I had to just step to the side and take a mini break. But I'm so very proud to say that I completed the exam in 5 minutes and got a perfect score. Pregnancy brain did not get the better of me. But what touched me the most throughout the process was the care with which my family was treated, particularly during the interview with the Canton of Geneva. By the time of the interview, my daughter was a tiny infant. She was a little fussy, and I was still breastfeeding. The interviewer showed patience with us, and she even shared some of her experiences as a mother. So the empathy she extended to me personally allowed me to relax and just focus on answering the questions that she had. Now, I'm not saying that Switzerland is a perfect country free from isms and phobias. However, the process of becoming a Swiss citizen learning about the country's history and how it balances regional and linguistic differences felt very inclusive. It strengthened my sense of belonging, and I just have to say that it was a fantastic experience. Well, that's the end of this episode, and thank you so much for listening. I know it was pretty heavy, so I tried to lighten things up a bit by sharing my experience in becoming a Swiss citizen. If you have any questions, please feel free to email me at saidah@fosterinclusion.com. That's S-A-I-D-A-H at fosterinclusion.com. And of course, visit my website at www.fosterinclusion.com. Bye!